Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm Matt Hansen.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Matt, I am super excited about this show because we are doing a retrospective on a set of movies that mean a lot to me. Well, some more than others. But for those of you who listened to last week's episode and heard the tease at the end, we are talking about Jurassic Park. That's right, Jurassic Park. But we're doing a retrospective on the trilogy of Jurassic Park, soon to be quadrilogy.
Yep, we're doing this in anticipation of the release of Jurassic World on June 12th, only a couple weeks away.
Only a couple of weeks away. And so before we talk about Jurassic Park and Jurassic Park The Lost World, as well as Jurassic Park 3, what are you thinking about Jurassic World? I know we talked about the trailer a little bit, and we talked about how people were complaining way too early about the CGI, but how about the idea of the movie? Are you excited about it? Are you indifferent?
We're going to talk about this as we go through our retrospective. I'm very much a newbie to the Jurassic Park franchises, as weird as that is. Now having consumed nothing but Jurassic Park for the last 2 weeks, I've seen the movies now. I listened to the novel, and I'm about a quarter way through the Lost World novel. Having consumed so much and becoming so familiar with the world, I look at the trailers now and I'm actually really excited. I think this premise is great. I think it's the next logical step if you're going to do another Jurassic Park sequel. The three films so far have been about isolated groups facing these dangers on these various islands. Mm-hmm. Now we get to see it on a very large, massive scale. Honestly, the first time I saw the trailer, I was really happy with it. And then I thought, have you ever seen any of the Jaws sequels, Tristan?
Just bits and pieces. I mean, not enough to qualify me actually saying yes.
This is pretty much the story of Jaws 3, but done looking much better.
Okay, I'll have to take your word on that one.
Because that one involves Jaws getting loose at SeaWorld, basically.
That's awesome. I need to see this movie.
It's really not as good as that premise is, but... It made me think of that for some reason when I saw the trailer, except that this actually looks good and it looks competent and it looks like it's going to be fun. So I'm actually really, really excited for it now. And, you know, with the whole world going Chris Pratt crazy, I mean, I can't argue with it because I see him in interviews. I see him in several different things. He's such a likable presence. So,
yeah, I actually, the first I saw Chris Pratt was in the pilot of Parks and Recreation. So I was aware of him when he came on that scene, became popular in the show, and he stole a lot of hearts in that show and just keep rising and rising and rising. And I really do feel like he deserves his success, and I'm happy for him. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, wow, the world really likes Chris Pratt. I hope he doesn't screw up and does something bad. Because like the pedestal that the internet has him on could crack quite hard.
I think there's, even if he does do a movie that's not as good, I think there's too much goodwill for people to turn against him personally as a human being. Like his star power is too much on the rise now, right now, to be taken down by anything. And I think between this and Guardians, he's a superstar.
Yeah, he very much is. And the whole idea behind Jurassic World, like when I heard that there were rumors that Jurassic Park 4 was going to come out for years. I mean, ever since Jurassic Park 3 came out, people were like, when are we going to do the fourth one? When are we going to do the fourth one? Even though the third one was the least financially successful one, people were still saying, well, let's do some more. And I don't want to sound negative, and I don't want to sound negative at all. It's just I'm kind of indifferent to it, where I think it could be a good movie, and I'm interested to see how far we can push the technology in a post-Avatar world, and what I love Chris Pratt, and I love Bryce Dallas Howard more, and I think they could bring an interesting dynamic to it. The clip that I saw with Chris Pratt interacting with Bryce Dallas Howard did not give me hope. I kind of wish that I didn't see the clip.
But taken out of context, who knows how that fits in the movie?
Exactly, exactly. Taken out of context, it could mean a lot of different things. So I'm not going to judge the movie based on that. And I'm not going to judge the movie based on the trailer. I'm going to see it, and hopefully I'll enjoy it. But I'm not like, you know, you know, tearing my clothes off and scratching at myself, going, I need it, I need it.
I'm not saying I'm like that to that point, but I am susceptible to when a new movie and a new when a franchise is coming out, and I've seen the other three and I've gotten so heavily invested into the other movies where I've researched them and all that sort of stuff. I can't help but be excited to see something new. And frankly, I mean, given the sequels and all the movies, this one looks like it has the most potential. I mean, like it has a lot of it potential to be really exciting. So
from the sequels, absolutely. I think like the original is the original, but I think from the sequels, definitely this one has some of the biggest potential to be winding and cool.
I mean, not to preview my thoughts too early, but this movie would have to be really, 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 really horrible to be worse than Jurassic Park 3.
Oh, you and I might have some interesting perspective then. All right, so let's just get right into it. Let's talk about the trilogy. So right off the bat, Jurassic Park came out in June of 93, Lost World came out in May of 97, and Jurassic Park 3 came out in July of 01. So there's quite a distance between some of these, about, you know, like 4 years each. And now we're getting one 14 years later. That's a huge gap. That's huge. But we're seeing that happen more and more. Now, with the first Jurassic Park, this movie, it had a budget of $63 million. Its return is over $1 billion with domestic and foreign gross. That's quite a return on your investment.
Yeah, I forget, because I can't remember if it crossed $1 billion before or after the re-release in 2013, but if it didn't, it was pretty close to $1 billion. And we have to keep in perspective, that's close to $1 billion in 1993 dollars. Who knows what it is adjusted for inflation in 2015.
So with that, I was 7 in 1993. You were 5?
In 93, that would have made me 4.
Four. Okay, so we were both quite young. Now, I have a long history with Jurassic Park, and as you said just now, that you don't. Now, when was the first time that you saw Jurassic Park?
Well, I might be embarrassing myself for saying this because I pride myself on being such a movie lover and movie buff, but I didn't get around to seeing Jurassic Park until it was re-released in 2013 in the 3D for its 20th anniversary.
So 2 years ago, the first time you saw Jurassic Park was 2 years ago.
Correct.
That's pretty crazy, and that's really cool that you now have this perspective, because my history with it is a little weird, and I have a story that goes along with it. And it's a little long, so bear with me here. Mm-hmm. So I'm 7 years old, I'm in school, and I really want to see Jurassic Park because all of my friends are obsessed with dinosaurs. When you're 7 years old, 7 to 10, you're obsessed with dinosaurs. Every boy, and I can't speak for girls because I'm not a girl, but every boy I knew was obsessed with dinosaurs at some time, and so was I. And it was just this weird phase that I feel like everybody goes through, and my best friend especially was obsessed with dinosaurs at that time. And so when this came out, it came out at the right time for us. But the thing is that in the minds of my mom, this was way too violent for a 7-year-old to see. Now, I understand that. I get that. It was PG-13. And the 13 is there for a reason. And so I was not able to go see this in the theater. And I was really angry about it because all my friends got to go see it. And even when it came out on video a little bit later, I wasn't able to see it. And I was upset about that. There was a time where, like, it came out on video. I was in 5th grade at the time. We did something special. And so the teacher wanted to surprise us with a viewing of Jurassic Park. Said, like, okay, you know, over the next couple of days, we're going to watch 45 minutes of Jurassic Park, and then until it's done, and you all get to watch it. And everybody's like, hooray! But since it's PG-13 and you kids are under 13, you got to get permission slips from your parents. And so I took the permission slip home, and my dad's like, yeah, sure, whatever, I don't care. But my mom's like, no, that is too violent. People get eaten up. A poor little goat dies. No, you were too young to view this movie. I was like, Mom, but you let me watch this. You let me watch this. She's like, no, you're not allowed to watch it. I'm not signing this permission slip. And so I was the only kid in my 5th grade class who didn't get to watch Jurassic Park, you know, at school. And so they're like, okay, well, since you're the only kid who can't watch it, then you get to go to the room across the hall and just color or something. So I was sent to the room across the hall. It was the room that was designated for the mentally challenged kids to calm down when they got out of hand. And so it was padded walls and bouncy balls and coloring set. That's what I had to do for 45 minutes for 3 days.
So you were basically put into child asylum because your parents didn't want, your mom didn't want you to see Jurassic Park.
Yes, I was put into child asylum, and the worst part is that I could hear the movie because I was so close.
Well, good. Then you could have just sat there and listened and pretended it was a radio drama.
I should have done that. And it was just so heinous. And so I went home and I complained to my dad. I was like, Dad, this is insane. I am the only movie buff. I could rattle off movie history even when I was 7 through 10 years old and 12 and everything like that. I could rattle off movie history. And I was the only one who didn't get to watch it because of Mom. And he's like, okay, well, here's the deal. He's like, don't tell your mother, but we're going to go over to your uncle's house. And so we went over to my uncle's house. We got some ice cream. My uncle had a Laserdisc player, and he had an awesome sound system, and he bought Jurassic Park just for me to watch there. And so I got to watch Jurassic Park on Laserdisc with my uncle and my dad, blast to full volume, and it was one of the coolest experiences in my memory as a kid. And then I was immediately hooked because of the special effects, the story, the sound quality. Everything about it just blew me away. And so that was my first interaction with Jurassic Park. Sorry for the long story, but it's a interesting, interesting tidbit of my history.
Now, begs the question, did your mom ever find out?
She found out eventually she found out long enough afterwards to the point where she couldn't be mad or care because I was past 13, I think, by the time she found out.
Okay, cool. So I'm betting by the time we get to the Lost World, there wasn't as big of a fight for you to not see it that time.
Right, yes, right. Like, there was no fight to see it. Because at that time, my dad bought it on VHS. Like, he got to the point where it's just like, I don't care. Like, this is a great movie. We're going to watch it. We're going to own it. And then we watched it all the time. And my mom never actually saw it. But and she still has never seen it. But to this day, she has this image in her mind that it's worse than, like, a Saw movie. In her head, Jurassic Park is like worse than a Saw movie.
It's really not that violent.
It's really not. Yeah, it's really, really not.
I mean, it's about as violent as Jaws is, which is, you know, which is fitting considering it's both Steven Spielberg.
Right, and that's the thing, is that, like, I think she just got it in her head that it was the most violent thing ever. She probably read it in some paper, like some, like, Reader's Digest journal or something saying, like, don't let your kids see this.
Now, before I talk about my experiences with the movie, have you ever read the book?
No, I haven't. And you and I were talking just last week about how you're reading the book and you're really, really enjoying it. And I realized that it's a sin for me to love the movie so much and it be based off of such a successful book from a writer who is so well known, Michael Crichton. I'm gonna read it next week. Like, I'm gonna get it and I'm gonna read it because you've singing nothing but praise for it.
Now, before I talk about the movie, I'll just talk about the book real quick. I really, really got into the book, and I listened to the audiobook because it's harder for me to read a whole book in a short period of time because I spend 8 hours a day at work. But if I get it on audio form, then I can just listen to it as I'm working. What's really cool about it, and I don't want to go too much into spoilers, but the way that it starts off in its narrative structure is it describes the first couple chapters of the book are describing a bunch of unknown animal attacks off the coast of Costa Rica happening to various different people, and it reads like this sort of like mystery thriller for the first couple of chapters. And then of course you bring in the main characters and it goes pretty much like the movie, although a lot of the characters I want to credit Steven Spielberg for what he did in the first movie, because he took a lot of characters that are really kind of cynical and nasty. That doesn't make them bad, but they're really like the John Hammond character that Richard Attenborough plays in the film is a bastard in the novel. Like, he's a money he's pretty much like the mayor in Jaws in the novel, concerned with nothing but money and glory. And spoiler alert, I won't say this much, but a lot of people who live in the movie died in the book and vice versa.
Okay.
There was that, and one of the most annoying characters to get around was the little girl who gets stuck with Alan Grant in the movie, who's really nice and sweet and smart in the movie, is this annoying little brat in the book. other than that, it was really, you know, even though it was an audio, it was a page turner, quote unquote. I really, really liked the book, so I definitely recommend it. If you like the movie at all, it follows the structure of the movie, and actually there's some stuff that show up in the sequels that was in the original novel that they didn't use for the first movie.
Oh, okay.
It was a good book, so thumbs up for Jurassic Park the book. But I guess that leads into my first experience with a movie. I always wanted to see Jurassic Park, but it was just something I didn't get around to, and there was a lot of other stuff happening, and you know, so on and so forth. But when I heard that it was being re-released for the 20th anniversary, I thought it would be the perfect opportunity to experience Jurassic Park the way audiences did back in 93. And that was on the big screen with the sound system, with 3D, but you know, that's just neither here nor there. I wanted to see it in the movie theater for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went with my friend from college who had also never seen Jurassic Park. So it was both of our first times. And we watched the movie, and I gotta say, coming out of it, we must have felt like audiences did back in 1993. We really loved it. I hadn't had a chance to rewatch it until this retrospective, but watching it again, God, it's a brilliant movie. I really, really like Jurassic Park. As a matter of fact, I think that I always kind of wait to go back and get movies until like the new one comes out, because then they're probably going to re-release it with a bunch of new bonus yeah. features and stuff like that. So when Jurassic World comes out, I'll probably get the other films and get all the bonus features and stuff like that. But really, really loved the movie.
Yeah, this is a movie that really defined its time. Like, this defined the early 90s. And I feel like this ushered in, you know, what Industrial Light and Magic really could do.
Not just that, let's give a shout out again. We mentioned him on this podcast before, but Stan Winston, who created Terminator, who created the Queen Alien, creates the dinosaurs for Jurassic Park.
Well, absolutely. That's the thing, is that like it successfully blended amazing life-size animatronics by Stan Winston, but also groundbreaking computer-generated imagery mm-hmm. by Industrial Light and Magic. It wasn't just one or the other. It was a blending of both, and this was the first movie to really do it this successfully. And it also, this around the time, because of the... Like, one big thing about me with movies is sound. I can't just watch a movie... I'm not one of those people who can watch a movie for the first time on their iPad or on their iPhone with headphones. I just can't do that. I need to be immersed in sound, and I have a very kick-ass sound system here for when I listen to music and watch movies, and I need it, and it's just as important to me as the picture. And Spielberg invested in the creation of DTS. It stands for Digital Theater Systems, and it's all about multi-channel audio. And it's, you know, we know it's pretty standard today, but it came out in 91. Spielberg invested in 93, and then it just skyrocketed, and it really is this submersive feeling. So when you go to the theater and you hear that multi-channel sound, at least in the 90s, it was because of DTS.
Yeah, people who were in the live in the 90s know what DTS was. If for nothing else than for the sound system check that they would do before each movie started, kind of like the THX thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like the THX thing. And so it just... you know, we didn't always have that. We didn't always have that immersive feel of multi-channel. And this really launched it and just made it a household name. Jurassic Park was also the highest grossing film until Titanic in 1997. And also, you were talking about numbers going back, like before the re-release. So when it was first released, it made $900 million worldwide in its original theatrical run. And in today's dollars, that's almost $1.5 billion. In its initial run.
Yeah, basically it's day's Avengers. It was that big of a blockbuster.
It was that big of a blockbuster. And so I think when I think back to Jurassic Park, like when I think about the movie, there's certain moments that pop up in your head. You know,
let's do talk about the moments, because there are some fantastic ones.
See, that's the thing, is that like every movie is a collection of moments. That's a simplistic thing to say. But with Jurassic Park, it reigns true because it is a collection of fantastic moments that are very memorable. Like, you know, with when the girl is holding the Jell-O in her spoon, and then it's shaking so hard, and then when the T-Rex is stomping, and we see the glass of water shake in just a little bit, and so that it goes off of the cup just a little bit, you know, like it's a collection of these moments that really make the movie.
Let's slow down a bit, because you just talked about two really great moments. The thing that I like about the thing with the Jell-O and the girl in that moment is that Spielberg and he does this throughout the movie, which I absolutely love. And it must be a lesson that he learned from Jaws. Spielberg like Hitchcock, is a master of suspense.
Yes.
What I like about that moment with the Jell-O is that you don't see what she's seeing. You just see her reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you hear the raptors screeching, you don't hear them. I mean, you don't see them in that scene. You just see the two of them reacting to it, which I love. And you brought up, again, my favorite moment in any of the Jurassic Park movies. And when I think Jurassic Park now, I think my favorite thing from Jurassic Park. And to Spielberg's credit, it is in The Lost World as well, which I really loved about that movie too, is it's like the Jaws theme. It's the stomping noise of the Tyrannosaur as it's approaching.
Yeah.
Even before you see it or hear it, just the thundering noise that it makes as it's coming towards you. That is the best suspension and tension builder that I've seen in a long time. It's my favorite aspect of these movies.
And I think that's the beauty of it and I think that's why Spielberg is such a great director, is because he learns from himself, not only from others. He learns from mistakes that he's made in the past, but he's also learned from what works in the past. Even though what he showed in Jaws, like when it was just like little bits and pieces of the shark and we didn't actually see the shark until halfway through the movie, even though that was a production mistake and that was why they had to hide it in editing, they found out that it worked. And so when he did Jurassic Park, we see the water shake, we see silhouettes of the dinosaurs,
everybody's whispering, like maybe it's the power trying to come back on.
Everybody's whispering, and we see people's reactions to thing. And then even when the T-Rex attacks for the first time, they're like, oh, what happened to the goat? The goat's gone. Like the goat's no longer there. The absence of something.
And not only that, they notice the goat's gone. Little girl goes, where's the goat? And then the eaten half of the goat comes crashing down on the car.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. Like, it was the absence of something was scary, and then it came jutted back to you in half of its form. And then even then, we see an eye looking into the car. We don't even see the full face yet. Well,
not only that, I love that the first reveal of the Tyrannosaur is on its own terms, because they come, they start off going on this tour, and they go by where the Tyrannosaur is supposed to be, and they bring out the goat, and it refuses to come.
Right.
And I love the fact that Spielberg decides to withhold showing it. Even when you hear it stomping towards it, you don't see it. You hear it first. You see that the goat's gone. The eaten carcass of the goat comes crashing down. And even then, you don't see it until Spielberg pulls up from the car and you just see the face of it eating the rest of the goat.
That's the thing, is that like even Spielberg has stated that the star of the movie is the T-Rex. The T-Rex was really going to be the star of the film, and originally the ending just had raptors. It didn't have the T-Rex. And so he's like, no, we have to put the T-Rex in there. It has to be in the ending. And he did, and it was a very memorable ending. And it just worked. And also the fact that I know there's this big push back to practical effects, and I'm glad that that's happening, but there's something, like, it was a life-sized animatronic T-Rex. Can you fathom that? This is in 93, before 93. A life-size animatronic T-Rex. How insane is that? And that is why these special effects hold up to even today.
Right. I was going to say, like, as much as we are forgiving of CGI, and I think that there is too much complaining about CGI, you look at the Tyrannosaur and the other dinosaurs in this film, and they still look fantastic today.
Right. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. It looks fantastic today because it's real. It's photorealistic because it's really photographed.
And some of the criticism, because I researched a little bit of the movie to see what people thought of it at the time and what critics thought of it at the time. And everyone was really complimentary. Obviously, it got great reviews because it was a real successful movie. But a lot of the complaining came from the fact that the characters, the human characters themselves are not as interesting, and they're kind of blanks. But to a certain extent, I agree that they're not as interesting, because who could care about the humans when you're seeing dinosaurs for the first time? But at the same time, though, I kind of like the characters in Jurassic Park. I mean, they're not super defined, but they're defined enough, and they're populated with likable people. I've always liked Sam Neill. This kind of put him on the map as far as superstardom goes, and at least in this first movie, Jeff Goldblum really steals the show for me. He's the character I would want to play if I were doing Jurassic Park as a reproduction of. You know what I mean?
Well, see, I don't understand. Like, I don't really even get that criticism.
Me neither.
The characters are bland because I feel like the characters are very unique and well defined. I mean, you have
we wouldn't be nearly as invested in the story if we didn't want them to survive.
Exactly, and the kids are very unique within themselves, but have the same goal. And then you have, you know, Sam Neill's character who is very much, you know, old school, and you have his partner who is an intriguing scientist, and you have, you know, like Jeff Goldblum, who's just Jeff Goldblum.
But
and...
he's Jeff Goldblum in every movie, but he's so funny and so...
Oh, he's awesome. He's one of the best parts of the movie. And so I feel like, I don't know, I think that's pretty lazy criticism.
And I just want to touch on something that you mentioned real quick. I am not a fan of, you know, precocious child actors. You know what I mean? Like, I child acting, especially in a lot of Star Trek, ruins Star Trek episodes for me. But I gotta say, these two kids that play Lex and Tim in the movie are some of the best, least annoying child actors that I've ever seen. I really actually like those two kids a lot.
Yeah, as far as kid actors goes, I mean, like, I've worked with a few and I've never had a good experience with working with kid actors, and I don't really like children in movies. But with Jurassic Park, I feel like they skirted the line enough of being precocious and annoying at times, but it still warmed your heart. When they were pleased, you were pleased.
But they never detracted from the movie for me. I never started hating the film when they were on screen. And especially at the end when it's the two of them in the kitchen versus the raptors. They're fantastic.
Oh man. Oh geez. That scene. You know, that has to be one of the greatest thrilling action sequences in cinematic history. And I'm not trying to be a victim of hyperbole here. I really do believe that, because that movie is in our minds. It's in our popular culture mindset. I mean, like, that scene has been parodied so many times, and the reaction that she has with the reflective metal,
which got me the first time I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, seriously, the first time you see it, like, you think, like, holy crap, she's done. Bam, no, it's a reflection. And then also, like, when she falls down and, like, through the ceiling, and then you think the raptor's going to get her, but then she grabs her leg at the last second.
Right.
It's so, I want to watch it right now.
And you know what? Because normally today you would be like, oh, they would never kill a kid in these films. But then I thought about it, and I'm like, you know, that works because it's Spielberg, and Spielberg killed a kid in Jaws.
Yeah.
Let's
not forget that. I think that's a valid point. I'm glad you brought that up.
So he is not above that.
Now, obviously there is a lot wrong with the premise. Now, a lot, you know, like with the age of DNA, how the cloning happens with the frog DNA working and everything like that. Obviously, it's not a scientifically accurate film. Of course, we understand that. But once you accept the premise and move on, because we're moviegoers, we're not scientists, this is not a scientific journal, this is a theater. You know, once you accept the premise, it's mind-blowing.
The fact that, you know what, if that's a criticism that people have, I think it's a ridiculous criticism, only because you're going to a movie where dinosaurs are walking among humans in the modern age. If you're going to see that movie to begin with, you need to understand that they're going to take some liberties with the science. This can't happen. But that doesn't matter, because the story and the characters and the action is so good that who cares whether the science is accurate.
Well, we could go on and on talking about this one movie, and I kind of want to, but we're not going to, because we've all seen Jurassic Park. We all know these moments that exist, and it was a home run, beginning, middle, and end. This is going to go in as one of the greatest, and I'm so happy that this movie was made, because we didn't even touch on the music. Now, we did talk about the music a little bit when we did our music special and talking about John Williams, and what can be said about John Williams that has been said already.
The music that accompanies the scene where Sam Neill and Laura Dern are seeing the dinosaurs for the first time is so majestic and captures exactly the feeling of that scene. It's my favorite part of the music.
Yeah, that opening sequence when they see a real dinosaur for the first time, that's what we're all feeling at that moment. We're like, oh my, like, we feel like we're there, and they show us a reaction that is believable, that if we were there and seeing, like, we wouldn't believe what we're seeing. We're like, is that really a dinosaur? Like, that's not possible. How is this happening? It's fantastic. All right, well, we have to move on in order to get to everything here. And the next one, as we said before, is The Lost World, Jurassic Park. Now, it's not Jurassic Park, The Lost World. It's The Lost World, Jurassic Park.
I gotta say, even though I didn't see this in the theater, I didn't see this until this week, Tristan, in preparing for this show when I'm diving into all things Jurassic Park. But 1997, that would have made me 8 years old and enough to start forming memories, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I remember vividly the marketing blitz behind this movie. It was going to be the biggest movie that summer. And it was, if I remember correctly. But the promotion on this one, because the first one was so successful, Lost World stuff was everywhere. I don't know what your memory is. I just remember it being everywhere. The TV was plastered with ads. I remember the toy commercials because I watched.
That's what I remember the most is the toy commercials.
I was watching Nickelodeon at the time because I was, you know, again, 8 years old. Every commercial break had a Lost World toy commercial. And I remember vividly, you know, that not only the toys, but the logo for the Lost World, and the T-Rex would break out of the logo for the toy commercial. And these were everywhere, everywhere.
I remember that now. I really do. The thing is that Jurassic Park came out in 93, got a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. Jurassic Park, The Lost World came out in 97, got a 52%. That's a huge drop off.
Right.
I'll just say this now, and you're going to hate me. This is my least favorite of the series.
It's a lot of people's least favorite of the series. And I think with the sequels, it's you pick your poison. Mm-hmm. As far as the two sequels are concerned, neither of them are fantastic.
You're right.
What I will say, though, is that I, you know, when I watched this movie, I watched the trailers and everything for it. I got to say the marketing behind this movie was fantastic, especially because it's on still on YouTube. If you watch the first Lost World teaser trailer, that is probably one of the best teaser trailers I've ever seen because it tells you nothing. It just gives you images and the tagline that something has survived, and you see the T-Rex just stomping, and you just see the logo for the Lost World. That's all they show you, and it's brilliant. I wish they would make teasers like that today.
I'm in love with a good teaser trailer. I really like teaser trailers that don't give away a lot. There's so much criticism nowadays where they're like, oh, if a teaser trailer doesn't give you everything and then say that the movie's going to be the best thing ever and then give you the entire plot, then it's not a good teaser. That's not the point of a teaser. A teaser is supposed to say, this is happening and you should watch it because this gives you a feeling. And that's exactly what the Lost World teaser did. And put yourself in 1997. 93 happened, one of the biggest films of all time, one of the most successful films of all time. And then out of nowhere, you get this you're gonna go see, you know, like some kids movie or like, you know, some action 90s movie. And then out of nowhere, you see a T-Rex scream at you. And then you hear the beat that is so ubiquitous with Jurassic Park. You're like, holy crap, we get to go see it again. You know, that is amazing.
So a lot of people and like to crap on this film, and I know it's your least favorite. I'm not gonna put up too much of an argument over it, but Lena Stromo's gonna love this because a friend of ours has been twittering me the whole time asking me what I thought of The Lost World, and I told him you'll just have to wait to hear the next nerd party to get my thoughts on The Lost World. But here are my thoughts. Nothing could follow Jurassic Park, I feel, and be as good.
No.
Things that I acknowledge that are problems, it's a lot more convoluted, the setup. Jeff Goldblum does a good job, but I think the strength of the Ian Malcolm character was when he was a side character, not the leading man. He doesn't do as well as the lead of a movie, but I still like him. I don't hate the character in this movie. The supporting cast, I mean, it's a little bit more goofy. You have Vince Vaughn, but it was before Vince Vaughn was the comedy guy. This is back when he was still breaking out. Mm-hmm. I like Julianne Moore a lot. She's always been someone I liked a lot, and I thought that if you're going to have a leading female character, she was pretty good. What I liked about the film, though, and why I can respect it more than I can Jurassic Park 3, is that the Spielbergianness, if that's a word, is still there to me. And I think he does a great job of not capturing exactly the perfectness of Jurassic Park, at least maintaining the atmosphere. And there are things that have carried over from 1 to 2 that I liked. The T-Rex is still the main antagonist, and Spielberg is smart enough to know that that's still the star of the film. The attacks on the camp when the T-Rex comes and when Julianne Moore and Vince Vaughn and the little girl are hiding in the waterfall away from it, I love that whole sequence of the hunters just getting slaughtered by the T-Rex and the Velociraptors and everything. I know one of the biggest problems that people have with Lost World is the climax in San Diego.
Yes, I think that's the clincher for me, is that, like, if it wasn't for that, Lost World might be number two on my list, but I think because that happened, it's just kind of like, really? This is what I like. It just didn't feel right.
Here's the thing, though, and I'm going to get slaughtered for this. I know it. It doesn't feel right, but not to invoke a pun, it really, really appealed to the reptile part of my brain, where, like, there's just, for me personally, it's ridiculous, and it's a far step down from what the first movie was, mm-hmm. but there's something that was so fun about watching a T-Rex stomp down San Diego and eat people and wreck buses, and I was laughing through the whole third act, and I feel like I was kind of laughing at it, but in a good way.
But it was not. But you could tell that it was not the intention for you to laugh at it.
I don't know that it wasn't, because it, because there are certain things that Spielberg puts in there that are just, if that's not supposed to evoke laughter, then he's more deluded than we think. And I don't think he's that deluded.
Well, no, there are definitely funny moments. You know, it's a Spielberg film. Of course, there's going to be funny moments in an action film. No, but
there's things that he does throughout that whole sequence that he puts in there for laughter. If he wants us to maintain tension throughout the whole thing, he wouldn't have done some of the things that he did. He wouldn't have the T-Rex stomp through a backyard and drink from a pool. He wouldn't have had the T-Rex roll the 76 gas station ball next to Julianne Moore and Jeff Goldblum's car. He wouldn't have shown a bunch of Japanese men running away from the big monster stomping through them if he didn't want to invoke silly images of Godzilla.
Well, no, like, that's what I'm saying, is that he did that for comic relief, but I don't think the overall plan of the idea was that, oh, this is so ridiculous, this is absurd, I'm going to laugh at it instead of with it. You're describing laugh with it moments, but you have the overall reaction of laughing at it, and that was my problem, is that, yeah, it had comic relief, but there was that entire segment was just like, really, really, this is what we're doing?
But my point is, that whole sequence, I'm smiling. And I never smiled once during part three.
That I can understand. I can get that. Like, I'm not defending Jurassic Park 3, and I'm not trying to, like, crap on Lost World. I'm just trying to say, like, that's why my ranking is that way, is because of that last part.
Right. And I know it's like that for a lot of people. I know I'm in the minority opinion. But what I will say is that sequence just made me laugh, and the rest of the movie captured enough of what I liked about the first one, where even though it was an inferior sequel, I still had an okay time with it. I would watch Lost World again.
I think that's the thing with me, is that I think you hit it on the head, because with me, like, with the first act, it was very convoluted, way too much setup. With Jurassic Park original one, it you know, it was very straightforward. But with the second one, way convoluted. You had to revisit too many things. You had to find out too many things. But the second act was phenomenal. It felt like they upped the stakes from the first one, and they had a little bit more excitement in certain areas. Not as much suspense, but...
But that attack on the trailer with Julianne Moore, Jeff Goldblum, and Vince Vaughn, where they had the baby T-Rex, and then the two T-Rex parents attack the trailer, and they're dangling off the cliff. Mm-hmm. Come on, that was great.
That's what I'm saying. It was great stuff. It was, like, great stuff in the middle, but, like, you had a convoluted opening, a fantastic second act, but then once you get to the third act, it loses all the goodwill that it built up in act two.
For some people, for me, I was all smiles the way through, and the cherry on top was at the end with the money-grubbing CEO of InGen. The adult T-Rex bites him, but then it lets the baby kill him. I mean, that to me was just fun.
All right, well, let's go ahead and, like, since we're mentioning Jurassic Park 3 so much, let's move on to it. So Jurassic Park 3 got even worse Rotten Tomato rating than Lost World, but not by much. Lost World got 52 and 3 got 49, and it made a lot less money, and it was 40 minutes shorter than Lost World.
I knew we were in trouble when we went from the 2 hours of Jurassic Park and Lost World down to almost, without credits, Tristan, I clocked it, it's about an hour and 25.
Jeez, yeah, it was, okay, Jurassic Park was 2 hours and 7 minutes at 63 million. Lost World was 2 hours and 9 minutes at 73 million. And Jurassic Park 3 was an hour 32 minutes at 93 million. So and that's just a big risk. Like, I know that, like, a lot of times, you know, they production companies say, no, it's got to be under 2 hours. It's got to be under 2 hours. And people, a lot of people don't know why that 2 hour mark is there. It's not so people can go take a pee. It's not so that it's for bladder control. It's not for people to get bored. It's so that they can run the movie more times during the day at the theater.
Squeeze out all the money that it can.
And I think that's why they knew that was going to happen in Jurassic Park 3. I think they knew that, okay, this is the third one. We're obviously not going to do better than the first. Hopefully we can do as good as the second one, but at least we can run it more times during the day.
I wonder if they even thought it could do as good as the second one, because the second one did make money. I mean, the second one didn't make as much money as the first one, obviously, because people didn't like it as much, but it made $600+ million, which for back then it was amazing. But
yeah, that's a lot of money.
But the reception to The Lost World wasn't as stellar, so I wonder if they had to realize that three is probably not going to make as much money. I would hope that they realize that, but maybe not because they're business people.
Yeah, I think they think that if they throw money at it, if they throw enough money at it, they'll at least get some return on their profit, and they did with Jurassic Park 3. But once you put in your advertising budget, you know, like worldwide it was $368 million. That's worldwide, and with a budget of $93 million, they say that you have to at least double that to be considered a success, and that's so $200 million. So that made $168 million more than what's considered a success. But with all that put in together, it still doesn't mean that this was a great movie.
And to contrast it a little bit, Tristan, I talked about how I remember even at 8 years old, the promotion for The Lost World was insane. Mm-hmm. This was 2001, so by this time I'm 12 and really more cognizant. Jurassic Park 3, the advertising and the stuff behind it, for me, it barely registered as so much more than a blip. It was nothing compared to what they did for Lost World.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And also, they had the power of Spielberg's name behind it in the director's chair. Like, yes, he was an executive producer on this film, and it was under his company. But at the same time, it kind of makes you wonder, how much was he really involved in this at the time?
Looking at the finished product, I hope not very.
Yeah, he was doing AI, and there was a lot of problems behind that, behind the scenes. And so I somehow doubt that he had that much to do.
Now tell me why, because I made my case for The Lost World. Tell me why Jurassic Park 3 is a better movie.
You know, I don't even know if I can call it a better movie. I think I just remember enjoying it more.
You remember enjoying it more, which means, have you seen it recently?
I saw it last year or 2 years ago. I can't remember which one. The girl and I did a rewatch. Like, we did all three of them in one day. I think it might have been a toss-up between the two, because I love Sam Neill. I love Grant.
I do too.
In the movies, and I think that was a big push for me. And I liked that they were on the island and they were in rundown facilities, and it was like the remnants of Jurassic Park, much more than a Lost World.
But you do know that in Jurassic Park 3, they go to the Lost World. They don't go to Isla Nublar.
Yes. I do know that, but like it had this nice old feeling to it. And I like the reluctant hero in Grant. I didn't really like Tay Leone or William H. Macy's characters.
Talk about something that ruined the whole film for me.
Yeah, I mean, like, even as I'm talking it out, I'm just like, I think I really like the moments. I like the pterodactyls. I was a big pterodactyl fan when I was a kid. I don't know. I just feel...
That pterodactyl thing that you're talking about comes way too late into the film, though. That's almost when it's over.
Yeah, I mean, and like I'm saying, is that I liked the second act of Lost World, and I was so disappointed with Act 1 and Act 3. But with Jurassic Park 3, I think I was just mid-level excited for all three acts. But no act disappointed me as much as the third act in Lost World. But the thing is, none of them excited me as much as the second act in Lost World. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess that does make sense. In looking at the three acts of Part 3, I mean, I was mildly interested for the first act, seeing Sam Neill back. I was hoping, mm-hmm, when I saw Laura Dern in there that she would be a bigger part, but she's nothing more than a bit role in this one.
Cameo.
Although it was interesting to see that Hoshi Sato is her assistant in that film.
Yeah.
But when I found out she was a bit part, when I found out what the driving force behind this story was, God, could I not care less.
Yeah, I mean, like, as we're talking out, like, talking it out.
And even The Lost World had an interesting premise. It may have not delivered exactly what you wanted, but the idea behind it and why they were there, even that third act, even if you're facepalming, at least you're having a reaction. I felt nothing in this third film.
Well, okay, so for those of you who don't remember, like, Matt, how about you tell them the premise, the differences between the premise of 2 and 3?
Well, the 2, I mean, like, you're still dealing with the remnants of what Hammond does. Hammond does make an appearance, even though his role in The Lost World is about as equal as Laura Dern's is in Jurassic Park 3. But so they have to go back to The Lost World and catalog what still remains out there. Meanwhile, they're dealing with InGen, who's under the direction of a new CEO, is trying to take these creatures and still trying to make a theme park out of them, but has the brilliant idea of trying to do it on the mainland in San Diego, which is where you get the third act from. At least, like, I could, as weird as that third act in Lost World was, I could see how they the zigzag way they got there throughout the whole movie. With Jurassic Park 3, we're picking up with Alan Grant again, which I thought was encouraging because I like that character. You know, he's back to doing his paleontological digs, although somehow he's fallen on hard times, which didn't make sense to me because, like, everybody knows about him in Jurassic Park at this point. Mm-hmm. So why he's not more successful, why he's losing funding for his digs is kind of weird to me. But so he gets hired by these two supposedly rich people in Taye Leone and William H. Macy to go give them an aerial tour of Isla Sorna, which is the Lost World setting. And throughout the course of the movie, they crash there and you find out that they're actually searching for their kid who disappeared there. And the amount of I swear to God, the dialogue that's spoken most of this movie is both Taye Leone and William H. Macy screaming the name Eric over and over and over again.
Almost like Matthew McConaughey saying Murph the entire time through Interstellar.
It's worse. It's almost worse.
Yeah, it's. I mean, like, as I'm talking about, like, for the longest time, I always said it was like, yeah, I hated Lost World and Jurassic Park 3 was okay. Like, it was never like, oh, I really enjoyed that. It was always just eh and meh. So, but now talking through it, like I said, like, Act 2 was much more exciting than all of Jurassic Park 3, but Lost World Jurassic Park disappointed me more. So I guess I don't even have to ask you what your ranking is as we finish up this podcast.
Yeah, it's 1, 2, 3. And hopefully, I think in just looking at the previews and looking at what this new one could do, it has the potential to go 1, 4, 2, 3 for me.
I'm thinking that, like, I'm really hoping at least that could do the same thing for me. Is that, like, I don't know. After talking it out with you, I'd have to say 1 and 2 and 3 are tied.
But you see, but do you get why I, like, it was so, the way you felt about Lost World is the way I felt about Jurassic Park 3, because at least I was still having fun during Lost World. I get it.
All right. Well, that's our perspective on Jurassic Park trilogy. We love the first one. Okay on 2 and 3. And are very hopeful for number 4. So please tell us what you like. What's one of your favorite moments from the Jurassic Park trilogy? And what are some of your hopes for Jurassic Park 4, otherwise known as Jurassic World? Thank you so much for listening. Please email us at contact@thenerdparty.com. Give us your show suggestions. Let us know what you think. If you could please write us a review on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a review, we'll mention you on the podcast. And also, you can contact us individually. You can find me on Twitter @TheInsaneRobin.
And you can find me @MHanson0207. So again, thank you so much for joining us for our Jurassic Park retrospective. Here's looking forward to Jurassic World in a couple of weeks. And until next time, the Nerd Party will be back because life will find a way.
Coming up next week.
Just a toy, a stupid little insignificant toy.
Whoa, hey, wait a minute. Being a toy is a lot better than being a space ranger.
Yeah, right.
No, it is. Look, over in that house is a kid who thinks you are the greatest, and it's not because you're a space ranger, pal. It's because you're a toy. You are his toy.
But why would Andy want me?
Why would Andy want you? Look at you. You're a Buzz Lightyear. Any other toy would give up his moving parts just to be you. You've got wings. You glow in the dark. You talk. Your helmet does that whoosh thing. You are a cool toy. As a matter of fact, you're too cool. I mean, what chance does a toy like me have against a Buzz Lightyear action figure?
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.